Ready for the show? I'm ready to start.
10, 9, ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
Roger, we got a roll.
Tower clear.
Roger, roll.
My dear friends from Earth, beyond, and from the galaxy and beyond this galaxy, my name is Maarten Horst. I'm the host of ET First Contact Radio, and with a guest I bring you every week the latest galactic news. My guest today is Diane Tessman, and Diane has a brand new book available on Kindle and Amazon. It is entitled UFO Agenda. So, you want to know the truth? This book is like no other book on the subject and has amazed 13 five-star reviews on Amazon. UFO Agenda asks, who are they? Where do they come from? What do they want? For centuries, the UFO phenomenon has intrigued us, and now Diane Tessman brings us face to face with some startling truths about the alien agenda. UFO Agenda asked, why are some people chosen for contact? Are the visitors from far-flung other worlds or quantum projections of our own mysterious consciousness? Or are they somehow connected to the ghosts and paranormal? Diane has counseled abductees and contactees for over 30 years, drawing on experience from her own childhood encounters, which some would call abductions. These encounters totally changed her life, and she has no regrets. She has physical evidence from those encounters, which is undeniable, and this certainty that we are not alone has motivated Diana for many years. While teaching school for 11 years, Diana was state section director for Florida Mutual UFO Network in the late 1970s and also a field investigator for the Aerial Phenomenon Research Organization, APRO, in 1980. In 1980, Diane underwent hypnotic regression with Dr. Leo Sprinkle and remembered one of several childhood encounters with a being named Tibus. One encounter was aboard what appeared to be a Starship UFO. Another encounter was in the cabin on Eagle Lake, Ontario. After moving to California, Diane began a monthly newsletter called the Star Network Heartline. This monthly newsletter is still thriving and has many of the original subscribers. In 1990, Diane began the Change Times Quarterly while living in Amsterdam. Both of these newsletters are available in e-form from Diana's website, earthchangepredictions.com. Diane has been accurate on a number of predictions over the years. For 5 years in the early 1990s, Diane lived in the Irish countryside of County Kilkenny and has studied Celtic shamanism. Diane also lived near Giant Rock in the high desert of California for 2 years of research and contact there, from 1995 to 1997. This was where George Van Tessel met the ETs with crowds of people cheering. Diana now lives in North Iowa, where her childhood encounter took place, and maintains the Star Network Animal Sanctuary on 10 acres of feral, abandoned, and abused dogs and cats. Diane's Star Network Sanctuary currently has over 65 cats who enjoy a safe, healthy, well-fed home. Donations are welcomed. Diane has written 6 books on the coming evolution in human consciousness, which of course includes ETs and their UFOs. Disclosure, UFO landings, and the face-to-face contact with aliens will happen. Details on all 6 books can be found on Diane's website, earthchangepredictions.com. Diane can be contacted personally through her website. Diane's first book, written in 1983, is now available on Kindle and Amazon paperback. It is entitled The Transformation. Future most intrigues Diane's personality. This is where Tibus, the being who guided her through the 2 UFO encounters, said he was from. Today, many years later, Diane has found many answers while acknowledging that the quest continues. And the quest also continues here, especially on ET First Contact Radio. So Diane, I want to heartfully welcome you to the show.
Thank you.
It is amazing that we found each other, I think, through Facebook. My first comment is actually to congratulate you that you are helping the cats and the dogs, because I have a very strong connection to animals, and cats always come to me, and I have a feeling that I have a Syrian connection with cats, but that's my personal experience. But it's so amazing what you're doing, so thank you for this.
Well, you're welcome. I love them too, and they've been my friends since I was a small child. I was had a lonely childhood, and I just know and love them so much and can't stand to see them suffer or be hungry. And the winters are very, very cold here, So I wanted to give back to them, so I started a sanctuary for them in my old farmhouse.
Yeah, that's amazing. I just want to talk a bit about this closure, because right now the things that are going on in the world with the missing airplane and all the things that are going on, I have such a wonderful feeling of a beautiful, bright future that we will have as humankind, as a planet. And I have the feeling that when it is known to humanity that we are not alone, to the whole population of the world, that there will be no wars anymore.
I think that, in fact, I know that there will be such a huge change for us that we can, even those of us that think about it every day and feel it, that even we can hardly imagine what a change it will be, and a marvelous, magnificent change. I truly believe that, and, you know, I've looked at the UFO field from both sides. I've been a so-called channel. I always say it's not exactly channeling, but I'll accept that for Tibus, if we pronounce it Tibus. So I've done the subjective spiritual side of guidance and love and light and all of that beautiful stuff. And I've also done sort of the hard-hitting UFO investigation as a researcher. And I've come to the same conclusion. I think spirit and science meet, and that as we evolve, science and spirituality won't contradict anymore. I think that's part of the step we're taking.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the whole UFO phenomenon has brought science and spirituality together in a broad
Absolutely.
Sense.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
So that the truth is greater than either one. There's, I think it has to do also with the bridge in our minds that isn't quite developed. It's developing, and we'll see a greater reality than just saying, you know, you can look at a rainbow and say, oh, it's a symbol of hope if you're spiritual. And if you're scientific, you say, well, it's water with the sun shining through it and made a prism. It's both. There doesn't need to be that contradiction. And it opens up new vistas on reality.
Yeah, exactly. This opens up a whole new paradigm for humankind.
Yeah.
And I must say I'm so fascinated by the early sightings and the early abductions. The abduction that you had, can you share any light on it? What happened and how it felt for you?
Well, I was 4 years old. I'm 67 now, so it was in 1952. I've had to work to get the year correct, but I believe I've got it. You know, when it happened, I was a little girl, and I didn't say, "Oh, what year is this? How old am I?" So I was 4 years old, I believe, for both encounters that I remember partially. And I have come to believe, you know, I just noticed a video by Travis Walton where he said he has realized that that the ETs or the occupants of the UFOs were actually acting as an ambulance after he and the other men got in the way of their departure and got hurt that way. It was an accident. And in my case, when I was four, I was actually very weak. I had tonsillitis and heavy nosebleeds, and I remember taking lots of penicillin. And by the time I was five, after the encounters, I was swinging off the rooftops out of the trees, and I did acrobats and ballet. And it was really a rather miraculous change between four and five. And during one of the encounters, a membrane was taken from me, the membrane that's in your mouth between, that goes up to your nose on the inside of your mouth, up the line of symmetry. I don't have it. It's gone. You know, I asked my parents. I asked my brother. I've tried to research, was there a down-to-earth answer for it? You know, did they take me to the dentist or the doctor, and why? And no, absolutely not. And they were very attentive parents. They knew what was happening. And I know that was taken during the encounter. So my theory is that, you know, these days doctors are engineering cells to put back into our bodies. They take our own cells, engineer them a bit, put them back in and cure cancer that way. And there's also a cure for AIDS that is very promising because of that. And I believe that I was cured at least of something very chronic or weakening, if not leukemia, from that encounter. And the membrane is gone. So there are other theories on that. But that's a bit of my encounter account.
yeah, that's a very fascinating story indeed. Now, over the years, you have done much research on the UFO phenomenon, and until now, I have had many people on the show who have talked about it. But I have a feeling that, you know, things are coming to a conclusion. There's so much information spread, so many witnesses, so many testimonials. So I think right now is the time that we come open to it and come make it public knowledge.
Well, I think so too. I believe that we as a human race, I think we have to look at ourselves as a human species or a human race. Excuse me. I think we've gotten ourselves, we've dug such a deep hole between wars and greed and poverty and abuse of the planet that it's really very dark days. The economies are bad. Societies are falling apart. All sorts of planetary damage in the environment. And I believe that humankind needs to learn to tie its own shoes. I think the ETs and the time travelers, who I strongly believe are a part of it, let us go into very dark days in order to realize what we've done to the planet and that war is wrong and things like that, and that we're at that very precipice. Things are really bad, and there's no one answer to all the environmental problems, all the aggressions. So really, contact with ETs, finding out about free energy to free us from oil and other resources that are so damaging, I really think it's time, and I think it's a planned thing on their part. I mean, they didn't interfere. Disclosure didn't happen in the 80s. It didn't happen in the 90s. But it really does have to happen soon, and that's the feeling that, spiritually, too. It's both scientific and spiritual. But we're in a real fix as a species and as a planet, a real problem.
Yeah, I think we have to take our responsibility now.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing a media action. I send an article to several websites where people send faxes and emails and phone calls to mainstream media stations and ask for disclosure. And also institutions like the White House, because they have to come clean about it. We all have the right to know what happened in Roswell, what happened in Bentwaters, what Admiral Byrd saw when he flew into inner Earth, etc. There are so many things that are hidden from us, but we have the right to know them.
You know, I lived in Ireland for 5 years, and the Irish have a saying that the center cannot hold. And I would add to that, if the center is rotten, it can't hold. And the governments are so rotten, and we've been told so many lies. We're really kind of held prisoner on this planet. And there's a whole galaxy out there. That's not saying that every ET race is just wonderful. They're not all ascended masters. But to be visiting Earth, I think they have advanced enough. The ones that come here, and also future humans, which I'm big on, because Tybus told me he was a future human. And I believed him. He could have been lying, of course. But I've looked into that in great detail, and I know Rendlesham and Brent Waters includes that, the idea of future humans. I think that in the future we did make it through. We grew up as a race, and we're right at that point. But I don't think that the rottenness of the establishment, of the governments, all the lies, that can't hold. It will, you know, Nelson Mandela said, change always seems that it's never going to happen, and then it happens. And that was his experience with apartheid. And, well, look at the flat earth. It seemed that would go on forever. The sun went around the earth, and we were the center of the universe. And they burned the poor guy at the stake that went around saying that we were part of the galaxy. But change happened. It just does. It's something that when skeptics say, you know, oh, we're never going to have disclosure. No, they'll never let it. It will happen. It's beyond logic. It's a force of the universe.
Yeah, it's the natural flow of energy. Because now many more people are waking up to the truth, and they are demanding disclosure. But is there any chance that, do you believe that it's possible that the ETs will take over our media stations and announce themselves if the governments will not do it?
Gee, I don't, that isn't their, hasn't been their way, but who am I to say it wouldn't in the future? I know that in the United States, if they land, if they get the wrong yard to land in, that will come out, not me, but a lot of citizens of the U.S. would come out with their shotguns, the U.S. and its guns, which I think is terrible. Or if they land on the White House lawn or at some official place, well, that's, you know, protected with missiles and goodness knows what all. So I'm not quite sure where they're supposed to land that will be successful, certainly not in the United States. But I'm sure there are more peaceful places. Go ahead.
Before the landings, disclosure will happen, and disclosure actually means that the secrets will be come out of the back, that the what's hidden will be revealed. So what I mean is that before they will land their UFOs, that they will speak to the world population in all languages via the mainstream media.
That's entirely possible. Yes, certainly disclosure has to happen before landings. And I don't know. I think, you know, my guide, Tybus, has always said there's a critical mass of enlightenment that has to be reached, almost like the last drop of water in a bucket before it overflows. And critical mass is being reached each day. More people wake up and that when enough people, when it doesn't have to be tens of millions, but when enough people wake up, maybe millions instead or tens of thousands, will change the frequency of the human hum. That's part of my channeling that is always has always come out, that there is a level of human consciousness that makes us human. I mean, there's a hum that makes a wolf, or a parrot, it's undefinable. It's a kind of consciousness. And to upgrade that just a little bit will awaken so many people that disclosure would do this too. A nice shock would help it. But that it shifts upward just a level. I mean, we almost had it. The Dark Ages went into the Renaissance. The 1950s went into Love and Peace and Flower Child 1960s, we can shift very quickly in consciousness, our race can. So perhaps that will happen too, almost like a radio network that isn't, or a media network that isn't an actual media network, but is the consciousness of humanity, and then we'll be ready for landings. So yeah, there could be all sorts of ways of of that happening.
Yeah, that's an interesting take, that our consciousness is rising, and that's because they are with their ships cloaked around our Earth and our solar system, and they're helping us to raise the vibration by channeled messages and also by the energy that they are beaming. So yeah, that's very nice possibility. I agree with you.
It would be like singing one level higher. Is all, or putting new software, in a computer, an update. It's almost an upgrade, if you look at it computer-wise, to where more people would be enlightened. Because as it is now, we have some wonderfully enlightened humans, and we have a few that are just seem so hopeless. I mean, cruelty to animals and each other, and we really have a great variance in humans.
Oh, yeah, there's so many types of humans here on Earth. The prerequisite for landings and disclosure would be that the consciousness is raising, or has to be raised until a certain frequency. But I must say that I felt the last few months an enormous build-up in the frequencies. I don't know what you felt, Diane, but there's an enormous feeling of excitement that I have, with many others. So.
Yes, I'm just really kind of driven to keep everything from Facebook to, you know, I've written on UFO Digest, I've done articles, I'm on UFO Casebook, and it doesn't, as a writer, it doesn't make me any money, which can be every once in a while I go, whoa, I worked hard today and I wasn't even trying to earn a cent of money, and of course I didn't. But it's just really driven. I'm driven, and I wasn't that way a few years ago. I was just into it. I always have been, but I wasn't driven.
Well, I'm very driven in this, and I try to have 3 guests a week on my radio show. And I really want all of the people that had contact or that are researchers, to bring out the word on ET First Contact Radio. Because this is also, I think, a precursor for disclosure, that all these interviews are available on YouTube and that people can decide for themselves. There are so many witnesses that tell their story. So it's paramount that we share this information.
And I think something that's coming out, too, that is gaining favor, even though there's a lot of effort against it, is that even many of the abductees, there's been people that have tried to make them such victims just because it happened to them. But like Travis Walton said today, you know, he'd come to realize they probably saved his life because these guys got in the way of their takeoff, their propulsion. And that just, he just realized that. And you know, abductions, I think there are a lot of them that are staged by the my labs, military. I think there are some that are just lied about for attention. But, you know, I'm sure they've happened, and that it depends a bit how the individual human responds to the unknown. For me, it's never been a trauma at all. It shaped my life, but only in a very dynamic, good way. But I think there's a little bit of realization that the word abduction is overused. I think encounter is better. And while I'm sure there's been some negative ones, they're not automatically this terrible thing that happened to you. I think, too, that something is given which after an encounter, which is this thirst for knowledge, and even looking into quantum physics and spirituality and things that we never would have looked into. I know Travis Walton said this also. I don't think I would have been, you know, written what I've written if this hadn't have happened to me. It opened the cosmos to me. It upgraded my consciousness. So it wasn't bad at all.
No, indeed. And this is bringing a positive turn to all the abduction stories. And yeah, let's use the word encounter, because I think those contactees that you had in the 50s and the 60s with many people that had those kind of experiences were the precursor for a whole generation that started to study and to investigate the whole UFO phenomenon. And that has brought the younger generations like myself today into this field of study and to make it known to the world. Because you guys have really inspired me to do this.
Well, it probably was even part of the hippie movement, and I was never quite a hippie, but I've always been a free thinker, and I think even our youth, this older generation, I think we were nearly in the age of Aquarius. We nearly bought the age of Aquarius. And then I believe that with government approval, too many drugs were available. A lot of bad drugs became available, and it all fell apart. But originally, I think we were a blessed generation that way.
Yes, you definitely were. Are there any particular things you want to tell about your new book or the other books that you wrote? What's in it, and what are the key points that you've written, and how people can acquire it?
Well, the two books on Kindle and Amazon paperback of mine that are available, is my very first book. It was written on an old garage sale typewriter because I was very poor. I paid $5 for the typewriter in 1983, and it's called The Transformation. And it has all of Dr. Sprinkle's notes on my hypnosis, my regression, memories of the ship and of other beings and of this man that I met, whom I call Tybus. And he was, for all intents and purposes, a human. He had amber eyes, which I've never seen on a human in this century. but outside of that, he was human, and he was very decent and even reticent. We sat on a bench in the ship, and he talked to me. I don't know if it was telepathy or verbal, but that was the basis. He gave me something, which I feel is quantum entanglement, which makes the channeling possible. I think we share consciousness. Now, I can't tell you how to guide his starship. It's not his whole consciousness, and he probably can't tell you where to buy kitty litter, but it's a part of consciousness that is, you know, the cosmic, the quantum ideas and the vista on the knowledge of the future and the knowledge of the cosmos. The Transformation has those notes during my hypnosis. And then it's also got a lot of my early channeling, which some people say was my purest, my rawest channeling, I guess you'd say. Then my latest book that just came out last July, The UFO Agenda, is more Diane talking UFO research, but it's very interesting because it's everybody says I'm outside the box. It doesn't give you one answer, like UFO occupants are extraterrestrials or they are time travelers. It gives you all sorts of ideas, quantum truth. Are they creatures of our own evolutionary power that are somehow falling out of the cosmic egg? Or, you know, it's a kind of a crazy book in places. It gives 10 UFO possible sources for UFO occupants. Things like dark matter, dark plasma, some of the further out theories. So it's kind of a collection that everybody enjoys reading, and it just makes you think. It's kind of unlike any other UFO book. But so the span, what's available on Kindle is a span between my very first book, The Transformation in 83, and my latest book. And they're kind of an interesting comparison in a way. I'm stopping for a drink of water here.
Yeah, I can't wait to read them. You know, I feel so excited about your story, the information you send in your bio, and what you have written there. I have just a feeling that, you know, especially you, but so many other UFO contactees will play a vital role in this closure, and I think you will be one of them once it happens.
Well, you know, I would feel, people always say, what would happen if you met one face to face. You wouldn't, you know, talk so big then. But I could come face to face with them and attempt communication. And, you know, I might be very nervous beforehand. It is such a wondrous, a far-out thing to think that there are beings that are more advanced than humans. We've never run into this before. We've always been the big cheeses on the planet. All the other animals, you know, fall beneath our guns or our spears, and we decide. We never even think that this is a planet which has her own welfare, her own consciousness, and we just conquer. And we, of course, are the smartest. And what a surprise when we find out that there are beings much more advanced than we are, that we're not the smartest kid, that we would be a newcomer into the galaxy. And on the other hand, I think I love Star Trek, original Star Trek. I think we have to go into the galaxy very boldly and proudly. I mean, it doesn't serve to say, oh, we're so scared or we're isolationist or we're inferior. We don't want to become inferior either. We want to go in as equals and say, yes, we have a lot to learn, but we're here to learn it. We are intelligent. And what a revolutionary idea that we're not the only intelligent beings out there or here.
Indeed. I'm also a Star Trek lover, by the way. And there's a scene I remember from Star Trek 2, The Wrath of Khan, where Spock is inside the engine room where matter and antimatter collapse. And there's a lot of radiation, and he puts the split in his hand, you know, with the two fingers on both two fingers on the left side, two fingers on the right side, and he says to Kirk, "You always have been, and always will be, my friend." Mm-hmm. And then he dies, and he comes back alive in Star Trek III: The Search for Spock. But you know, Star Trek is the whole idea of the Federation of Planets and Starfleet Academy. Especially because I also love The Next Generation with Captain Picard, where Wesley Crusher, you know, I was 13 years old watching the TV. I saw Wesley Crusher, and I was so much into him. I was actually on the bridge of the Enterprise.
Right.
I was Wesley Crusher. I was seeing the series, and I was so inspired. You know, I didn't see television when I was a child, and the first thing I saw was Star Trek Next Generation. That was so amazing. And I knew that this reality could be real in the future.
I believe that Star Trek is a window into a reality that is real. I think it might be a future reality. That's one reason I'm so impressed with the idea of future humans being part of the UFO phenomenon and being part of who we're going to meet, because hey, that's us out there. I truly believe it. We managed to survive our dark days, and Star Trek was really an incredible show. It really was, or is.
It still is. Well, you know, the characters, Leonard Nimoy, Patrick Stewart, actually all the whole crew, they were so different, so many different types of beings. You know, Spock was so logical and so rational, and Kirk and the other crew members were more emotional. And then in Star Trek Next Generation, well, you have Klingons on the bridge of the Enterprise and all the different species. And Data, but he wants to become human. All those lessons that are learned in Star Trek to thrive and to become a better being than you are. This urge to evolve, this is such a great teaching for humankind, you know?
Something that always sticks with me about Star Trek was Kirk saying, oh, yes, we're barbarians, but we won't kill today. That's all it takes. We won't kill today. And, you know, every fall I go through hell here because the deer like to stay on my 10 acres, and hunting is a big deal here, deer hunting. And to me, that is just so barbarian. I can't, to me, it's like another planet. And I always think of Star Trek. Also, Kirk got in the big fight with the lizard. And then when he could have killed the lizard, the Gorn, at the very end, he refused to kill him. And to me, Kirk was trying. He was emotional and egotistical and all. But he was an example of a human trying to evolve, to be better and not kill today and be better than what we are today.
Exactly, because at the end he didn't kill. So what's the purpose of killing? You know, when I was walking in the forest a couple of weeks ago with my best friend, and we saw a deer, and the consciousness of this animal is so advanced. They are so sensitive. If you look in the eyes of a deer, which rarely happens, you see such a soul that is so advanced and so far away. Why would we kill those loving animals? It's
right, and he would not have, but these hunters do. Unfortunately, I feel like I live in the dark ages, and you know the deer stand on my land for 3 weeks during hunting shotgun season, and they watch the hunters go by. They're so intelligent. They know not to move off my land because I've got no hunting signs. And then if the hunters come onto my land, I go out there like the old witch of the West. I'm sure they think I'm a terrible old witch and chase off the hunters. But, I mean, I will defend the deer. Really foolishly on my part. I don't care if the hunters have guns or anything, which of course they do. But there are so many people like myself, you know, and you on Facebook. All the friends that I run into are all animal lovers. I mean, we can argue about abductions and everything, but everybody I want to bother with or who wants to bother with me, we're all animal lovers.
You know, all Spock could say about killing animals is this.
Humans make illogical decisions.
Well, I do that again. It was not loud enough.
Yeah, I heard.
Did you hear it?
I heard it, yeah.
It's really true. And also this saying.
Nothing unreal exists.
yeah, that's great. I love that one. Yeah,
he's amazing.
Unbelievable technology.
Yeah, we love those guys, those old days, and I love them.
Right here.
Well, you know, a lot of my awakening as an adult was due to Star Trek, because I had those encounters when I was 4, and then I sort of went into nature for a while when we still lived in Iowa. And then my parents moved us to Florida, and I started to grow up, and I had a boyfriend and got into some civil protests and very kind of worldly stuff. And then I saw those Star Trek reruns when I was in my 30s, and that's when when my path changed, or late 20s, I guess it would have been, when I've been, ever since, I've been what I am now. But there was a time of awakening when I had some paranormal activity, too, back when I, for in my late 20s.
Yeah, I also learned so much from it. You know, it was really a school for me to watch it. And I watched the whole series, everything from A to Z. I believe, you know, of course, about the existence of the Galactic Federation of Light through different channels. But the idea of a galactic federation, interstellar, intergalactic, corresponds with the idea of Star Trek, that there is a federation of planets. And this is really the idea that I believe is true.
So much in Star Trek. Look at all that's become reality in the technology. Everything from cell phones, communicators, cell phones.
Yeah.
They're working on even the transporter, I've read. Oh, I have a cat mixed up in the in the telephone. Wait, there.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, indeed. The transporter is an idea that's actually a reality. I have heard that science has been able to transport particles from one place to another place without the use of transportation. They could really do it in the quantum physical way.
I think first they had to do, they thought that it would duplicate it and actually destroy the original, but duplicate it. But now they've got it down to where the original, I believe I'm right in that, it's small particles, but they can actually get the originals transported, which is just incredible. And warp speed, they're working on that, or warping space.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Yeah. And the whole thing is that all these technologies, Keshe has recently released all his documents to the internet people. So actually anybody can have these documents and start to build those free energy devices because they're working.
And what a blessing, what a revolutionary thing free energy would be. And here it should be available to us. And the governments or the powers that be just, well, there's a lot of money mixed up in oil and gas and all of that, coal.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Yeah, what a time we are living. It's so exciting, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And I think that those of us that are just, I always say we're not chosen. Nobody chose us. We chose ourselves. So those of us that are really into it, I think we were meant to be here to spearhead the excitement and try and make it happen. But I don't think, you know, that the gods chose me. I chose myself. I also wonder if maybe even before I was 4 years old, possibly, you know, I don't know if some of us are born, maybe belong somewhere else, really, like in the future or to a different planet and are born into this. That's a whole different subject, but it's not only exciting, we're making it. We're actually creating it, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and now you actually come to the point of starseeds, because I think people incarnated here right now since the last century are starseeds, because their soul actually has lived different lives on other star systems to bring this knowledge and technology and wisdom here to this planet.
Yes, I for over 30 years I've worked with star seeds, and my contact Tybus has also, my star network is full of star seeds, not UFO researchers or even regular people. It's all been a star seed friendship and effort on our part. At one point we had over 500 people, but with the internet it was mostly hard copy postal as far as my huge network. So also a lot of them have passed on. I think they've gone home to work on it from there. But the internet just doesn't pay writers. But anyway.
That everything is consciousness. Everything is consciousness. That's the all there is consciousness. And our body is just a temporary vehicle was bringing us here to this place in this time and space. To fulfill the task of uplifting the vibration of this planet.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct. Hmm. Yeah, I know that my mother had a lot of miscarriages and then had surgery and was told she wouldn't have any more children. And I came along 10 months later, and I always thought that was kind of strange. But, you know, so I think that's probably true with a lot of us, that we came in to do what we're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, consciousness,
somebody
you know.
That was a little joke.
Huh?
I said somebody wanted to enter the room. Captain on the bridge.
I was going to say that consciousness trumps death, and consciousness trumps time, and consciousness trumps space. Consciousness is all, you know.
Yeah, we have to get serious. Yeah, indeed, consciousness is all there is for me, and it's the driving force of all life forms.
And I believe that the universe is consciousness. So in that way, we're each a piece of the puzzle or a cell of the whole consciousness, and we're out exploring and investigating, I guess.
Yeah, indeed. And I have just seen recently some documentary that actually the particles or the empty space between planetary objects or interstellar objects is consciousness. The whole space that is filling up this universe is consciousness. The void. They can also call it the void. So that's so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Realize
it is amazing.
Yeah.
I've done some work on there's dark matter. They've decided all around Earth in a larger ocean of dark matter, and it's in a plasma form. And you know, we're a biosphere of plasma, bioplasma. And so why doesn't dark energy have a dark biosphere of life? And that's one of the chapters in my UFO agenda. It might explain ghosts and angels and all sorts of things. I'm not saying it does, but just think, if there's a living ocean of dark plasma that makes a larger Earth around this small rocky Earth, which is visible Earth,
mm-hmm.
You know, what's out there in the universe is just, oh, we still don't have a clue. It's just incredible, beyond words.
Yeah, this makes me think about a book by Dean Radin called Entangled Minds. Do you know about Dean Radin and his work?
Yeah, somewhat. I've heard it.
He actually proved scientifically that consciousness is the glue, the life force that is creating and connecting all life in the universe everywhere.
And so, to me, this shows that even if a planet is hostile to the life we know, that probably consciousness settles on any world and creates for itself a physical body. And so the planets that we say, oh, they're too hostile, no life there, we're foolish to think that, because consciousness can adjust to any environment, I believe. It comes first, not the physical evolution of life, but consciousness.
Exactly. Well, that's how I think planets are terraformed, and how creations, life forms, can thrive on any planet, any space, any place in the universe, and start to develop and create other life forms.
Yeah.
Anything is possible. Anything in creation.
And if a consciousness wants to interact with an environment, it needs to tell up from down, and it needs to interact with some kind of hands or something, and so it creates for itself a physical body.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
It really is.
It's beautiful. Yeah. And we are now wondering ourselves, and we are surprised about this, because we have so many years being lied to in our education, in religion, in politics, in the news media. We are actually rediscovering our true origins through ufology. All those truths are coming back to our front door, and that's so amazing. So I think we are actually the teachers for the new world. That will thrive after this closure. But if you just turn on the television, it's all lies, all negativity. They only report the negative news. This really needs to change.
And they've got people so scared that, you know, even back in the 60s and 70s, we were still, well, like the astronauts going up in those tin cans with fire behind them, very crazy and risk-taking, but we had spirit, and the rock and roll showed spirit, the music did. Now they've got people so scared. You can't go out without a helmet on and doing your exercise. And did you eat the right thing? Because you'll get too much. I mean, they've just got us so hung up on our physical selves that our spirit, but our spirits aren't beat down. There are so many of us that are more spiritual and more excited than ever. But their goal is to beat us into submission and be so worried about ourselves every day while they make war and plunder the planet and keep their power.
Yeah. Well, let's make a league of light altogether. Everybody that's listening, make this video viral once it's on YouTube. Share it with your friends and make this world a better place, all of us, and spread the truth, spread the knowledge, because we have come to the end of this interview, Diane. And I want to ask you if you again can read to the listeners the name of your website so they can contact you.
It's www.earthchangepredictions.com.
Yes. Well, it was an amazing opportunity to have you on the show, and maybe later we can do another show where we can go more in depth and share more information.
I enjoyed it. That would be fine with me.
Yeah. The time went so quickly, so I want to thank you, Diane. We had Diane Tessman on the show. Her website is Earth Changes Predictions, or earthchangepredictions.com. And Diana has written several books, The Transformation in 1983, and her new book is The UFO Agenda. So what? So you want to know the truth. And yes, we all want to know the truth. So thank you, Diane, for being here. And
thanks.
Yes, and live long and prosper.
You too. Bye.
Live long and prosper.
And to my listeners, love and light.